a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Welcome everybody that's here today. Please take this time to check your cell phones. We'll make sure they're on vibrate or turned off. And as usual, we'll conduct this meeting with the utmost professionalism from everybody that's in this room. And with that, Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Campbell,
here.
Eklund,
here.
Hager,
here.
Hawks,
here.
Heinemann,
here.
Heinert, Hickey,
here.
Sly,
here.
Soli,
here.
Steele,
here.
Westra,
here.
Magstead,
here.
Chairman Munsterman,
here.
A quorum is present.
And I'm here too.
And you're here.
Very good. We have the minutes from the last meeting that are before you. I'd entertain a motion to approve those.
Second.
Motion by Representative Hager, seconded by Representative Westra. I heard you. Any discussion on those minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Minutes are passed. Welcome to our internet listeners and everybody that's here with us today. We have a couple of pages with us. What I'd like you to do is step up to the mic, turn it on so the green light shows. We'd love to know your name, where you're from, and what your vision is for your life.
My name is Hadley Cropsey. I go to Lyman High School, and next year I will be attending SDSU for pharmacy.
My name is Laramie Olivier. I'm from Coleman Egan High School, and next year I'll be attending SDSU for either secondary English education or preschool education.
Very good. Well, it's great to have you with us here. If there's any handouts, obviously we'll have the pages be able to help us out with that. And also, if you plan on testifying today, make sure that you do sign in. And as a requirement of the Secretary of State, if you are here representing an organization, you'll be required to have a badge. If you're here representing yourself, don't worry about it. You'll be here representing yourself. And with that, we'll move on to today's consideration of bills. We did begin or took some partial testimony, proponent testimony, excuse me, on Senate Bill 69, which is what we'll start out with today, and that is to revise certain provisions of the Health Professionals Diversion Program. And so we'll continue with that public testimony, proponent testimony for Senate Bill 69. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I should wish everyone a happy Valentine's Day early this morning. My name is Brittany Novotny. I am the Executive Secretary with the State Board of Dentistry. The Board of Dentistry is one of the five participating boards in the Health Professionals Assistance Program. We, along with the other four boards, helped draft this bill. We're very supportive of the updates contained in here, and particularly the inclusion of the mental health component. So with that, we would respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 69. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Terry Dosh. I'm the executive director for two associations that are behaviorally health-oriented, Council of Mental Health Centers, also Council of Substance Abuse Directors, and I'd like to speak on behalf of both. And we would just mostly like to weigh in on this bill and go on public record in support. And in doing so, I'd acknowledge two main points about this program. The first is that it has done a great job in terms of conserving workforce, of keeping licensed professionals in profession by dealing with their issues and monitoring them to recovery. The second is it does a very good job of assuring the public safety while it's doing that. And for that purpose, we do support it. And we also recognize that this broadens the scope of the program to include existing mental illnesses. And we think that's extremely important and very credible. Seldom do you see substance abuse disorders absent some type of underlying emotional or mental disorder right along with that. And we're talking chiefly about depressive conditions that can lead to suicide. Very important that these be recognized up front through a credible assessment process and dealt with. And so for those reasons, we want to go on record in support, and I'll stand by.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 69. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Deb Fisher-Clemens with Avera Health. I would just like to add my support of this legislation. Since its inception in 1996, the South Dakota Health Professionals Assistance Program has worked to assist hundreds of licensed professionals and students attain successful recovery and facilitate safe return to practice and continued practice. To me, that's the key words. Back to safe practice and continued practice. As we look at issues of recruitment and retention of professionals across the state, that is critically important. Physicians or medical students may contact the program directly, or employers or licensing boards may refer to the program for assistance. Program staff includes licensed, credentialed professionals and expertise in addiction and mental health issues, and who work in a highly confidential manner. This is a very important piece of legislation that further supports the work that has been done since 1996, and I want to ask for your support of the Senate bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 69.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota State Medical Association, and I won't repeat, but this really has been an effective program that avoids the necessity to go through the process of the regulating boards. And it is important for the rural areas in keeping, they have to be part of a program in order to stay active. So it's been very effective, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 69. Good morning.
Good morning, Representatives. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm Senator Deb Soholt, and I'm here speaking on behalf of myself. I do have experience with the HPAP program in having served on the Board of Nursing for 8 years and 3 years as its president. And I just want to tell you, you know, how heartwarming it was to see professionals that were at risk to themselves and to the public because of a disease then be put into a program that allows them the kind of support and recovery mechanisms so that they can come back to the profession. And what I love about the HPAP program is that we really have a foundation of understanding how SB 70 is going to work, and that the Public Protection Bill, this is really the same kind of mechanism, that it is a diversion from discipline, understanding that mental health issues and substance abuse issues are really an illness. And so it's a way of putting them in a safety net so that they are not at risk to the public, that we have monitoring controls when they're most at risk. We have tighter controls. And having sat at the Board of Nursing and watched professionals come back totally well, ready to go back into the profession, is really a wonderful thing. So I really urge your support of Senate Bill 69. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 69. Proponent testimony. Seeing none, opponent testimony for Senate Bill 69, if you dare. Just kidding. Opponent testimony. Sorry about that. Seeing no opponent testimony, we'll close public hearing and open to committee questions. Representative Heineman.
After that comment, maybe Ms. Novotny would want to answer this. I'm not sure. It's some technicalities in the wording, so I strongly urge support of this particular bill, but
I'll do my best.
Okay. The first page, and I'll see if I can get it. Page 1, line 11. You have on there continuing care of any regulated health professional. Should that be licensed or not? Because you mentioned in this statute throughout the process of licensed individuals. I don't know in statute if regulated, if there are other outside of the licensing.
Mr. Chairman, Gloria Damgard may be more appropriate, but I'll certainly do my best. It's my understanding that there are certain people that are not currently licensed that are eligible. For instance, nursing students would be eligible for this program if they present with a substance use disorder.
Okay, great. And then a follow-up. And then, again, I'm not trying to pick things apart, but I'm just trying to be helpful. Page 3, line 19. Include one actively practicing licensed healthcare professional. In our profession, this program has been very beneficial, and our profession is very supportive of it, as you well mentioned that. But my question there is, how do you include a licensed healthcare professional that has demonstrated expertise in the field of mental health or substance abuse?
Mr. Chairman. I guess I cannot speak to the specifics with the evaluation committee. I know that there's one individual from every licensed healthcare profession that is involved in the program. How they demonstrate that expertise, that would probably be a question for Maria Eining and Gloria Damgaard. So I apologize, I can't give you the specifics.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman. And the only point I'm getting at is it appears you want, if it's a dentist involved, you want a dentist on that board that's going to oversee that. But you also want someone that's an expertise in mental health. I mean, I guess we deal with mental health every day in our profession, but I don't know if you would consider us an expert on that. So my question would be, sure, if you want to.
Thank you for your question, Deb Soholt. I think I can speak to that in that all of the involved licensing boards, such as dentistry, nursing, medicine, would have representation to that HPAP planning program. Then this piece also indicates that right now, for instance, through the HPAP program, that's a contract that is vetted, and we have a group that has mental health, licensed mental health professionals. They would also be a part of that group to advise on the licensees and the status. So that's where that comes from. It's a provision in order to secure that we would always have a licensed professional that would be offering that expertise in substance abuse and mental health disorders.
Great.
I don't know if that answers your question, sir.
Thank you.
Good. Further committee questions? Representative Foley.
Thank you. This question is addressed to whomever might answer it. It's somewhat general, but I'd like to know more about the disciplinary procedure as it works with this area. I'm very much in favor, glad to find out that this is in effect. At what I know, if someone is denied admission, then they're reported. But I'm seeing that on page 4, line 16, I think. But are there other ways where, how does the discipline, you might say, interface with this? Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Senator Deb Soholt, and former board member on the Board of Nursing. There are multiple tracks, Representative, in how this works. It depends, first of all, individuals can self-report into the HPAP program, and that is entirely confidential from the licensing boards. They recognize that they have an issue, and they want to become well, and they would move into that HPAP program confidentially. And the HPAP program, if they would recognize the mental health professionals, the substance abuse professionals, if they would see that this licensee is getting into trouble and that there would need to be then a conversation with the licensing boards for public protection. Okay, the next piece is that typically how people come into the program is it's the last cry for help, if you will. And there is discipline that would be considered. And so when this was created and named the diversion program, it was diversion from discipline. And the reason we want to change the naming is because now it's an assistance program, whereas diversion, people think, well, you've automatically diverted drugs or whatever from the workforce. That is many times how they come to us. There is some infraction. And typically, it's the last cry for help, if you will. So there's different sanctions. Typically, what happens is we would encourage the licensee to voluntarily surrender their license. And that it really behooves them. It's in good cause and good faith. And we would then have their license, and they would not have it until the time when they could demonstrate a level of wellness where they could go back to work. Then also, if they will not do that, then they would be summarily suspended. So we would move their license aside, if you will, and hold it and not allow them to the workplace. And there is a nurses licensing system, and so all of this nationally exists. So if anybody is getting licensed, they can go into nurses and take a look at that and see if this licensee is under any kind of discipline and not the ability to work. Once that, typically the licensee has to stay out of work for almost up to a year. They really have to demonstrate that healing and wellness support structures, you know, that they are keeping themselves well and clean. There's a lot of things that go into recovery. Once they re-enter the workplace, they are assigned a workplace monitor. And there's a monitoring contract and how they come back in. And if it's a narcotic addiction, for instance, then they would be not allowed to do narcotics. until they had fully demonstrated that they were ready to handle that. And the HPAP program, when the Board of Nursing mandates people into HPAP, it's a five-year stint. And I think, you know, that's really a responsibility on the licensee, because every single day for 5 years, they have to call in and interface if they are need to do a random sample to determine where they add in levels. We also have a full algorithm and criteria about, you know, someone could miss one phone call. I mean, something happens in your life. So it isn't like all of a sudden your license is taken away again. But there is an algorithm of points. And if the person would say, like, miss two call-ins, then the HPAP program, it triggers automatically that they are tightened up. Or if we're worried about them, you know, you're doing really well, and for a full year, your urine samples have been completely and totally clear, then there's the lesser amount of sampling. If it's the other way, it really tightens up so that, you know, you may have to do it like every day, and then we're back to a conversation about removing you from licensing in the workplace. Does that answer your question, Representative? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm impressed. I
expected something like that. It's helpful to know. At the same time, this is available, that there's those safeguards for the person we hope won't fail in this situation. But
Mr. Chair, if I might follow up with one more comment. What I also like about SB 69 is that we're expanding languaging to include mental health provisions. Over the last 5 years or so, we've seen, you know, it's not a large number, but we have seen licensees that are also struggling with mental health issues that would put them at risk to the public. And the Board of Nursing would provide board-funded mental health evaluation to sort out, do they have the proper decision-making ability to provide safety to the public? So that's part of the reason for adding that languaging into SB 69.
Very good. Any further committee questions? We'll move into discussion and or action. Representative Heineman.
I move do pass.
Do pass motion by Representative Heineman, seconded by Representative Magstead. Any discussion on that motion? Representative Heineman.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm familiar with the program. I'm glad to see the wording change, because I always did have a problem with some wording, I guess. Diversion is always a big question. Our profession has, I know, used this process and has been very, very beneficial. Just to answer the former representative's question about reporting, each board has their own way of dealing with issues that come up. I guess if you're talking about discipline, each board has a different way of handling that, and I guess that probably to follow up Senator Soholt's comment about that. Once they decide not to go into this program, this assistance program, then the boards, it's their discretion as to what they're going to do. So, but I urge do pass.
Very good. Any further comments? Representative Soley.
Thank you. Just one short comment. Leave it to the nurses. They know how to do this. I appreciate learning about the program and then seeing the improvements made. I'd be happy to vote for it.
Very good. Well, the motion before us is a do pass recommendation on Senate Bill 69. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Campbell.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Soley.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Magstead.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
We have 13 yay, 0 nay.
Very good. Senate Bill 69 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Heineman, would you take that on the floor, please? Thank you very much. We have with us the doctor of the day, Dr. Tad Jacobs. Welcome, and thank you for being here. Well, you can't expect a Brookings boy to or you to go unnoticed. It's been great practicing alongside of you in communities for the last, 30 years, at least for me. So, Well, we're going to move on to Senate Bill 118, which is to provide for the issuance of a resident medical license and to repeal certain resident training permits issued by the Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiners. We'll now take proponent testimony on Senate Bill 118. Proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deb Bowman, and I'm the governor's senior advisor. And we come before the committee today to ask your support of Senate Bill 118. Senate Bill 118 is coming about as a result of the governor's primary care task force that met throughout this past year to develop recommendations on how we can improve access to care, primary care for all South Dakotans, particularly those in rural areas. I had the pleasure of co-chairing this task force with Dr. Mary Nettleman, the dean of the School of Medicine, who is here with us today, and also members of your body, including a member of your committee, Representative Magstead, served on this group along with Representative Holly, Senator Brown, and Senator Sutton. And it was a really good process and really a worthwhile process. And during one of the task force meetings, there was a discussion about the requirements in South Dakota licensure law for medical residents that potentially prohibited them from practicing in some instances in healthcare facilities. And I want to give a big thanks to Dr. Sean Van Gerpen, who actually is led this effort to bring this to our attention, and if you recognize the name, indeed, he is the son of Senator Bill Van Gerpen. So we have lots of family connections here. Moonlighting in the residency program is typically defined as an activity outside the requirements of the residency program in which a medical resident performs duties as a fully licensed physician and receives payments. And as Dr. Van Gerpen explained to me and others, is it gives the resident an opportunity to make some money in working in emergency rooms and those type of places to at least be able to have a living and maybe reduce some of their debt as they're working their way through medical school. Moonlighting provides important experience for the residents to prepare for their medical practice once their residency is completed, but it also provides communities with an opportunity to develop relationships with our medical residents that could potentially lead to an employment opportunity for that resident and a great opportunity for that community in order to find another physician, especially in the rural communities. South Dakota is one of the few states, if not the only state, that does not issue a license to a medical resident. Currently, a medical resident in South Dakota can either get a resident training permit or a resident certificate. Because South Dakota does not issue a license, many medical residents are choosing to take advantage of moonlighting opportunities out of state. So they're going to Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, and working in emergency rooms and other such situations in other states. What that means is they're developing relationships with the hospital and the community in outside of South Dakota, and that's not what we want. We want our medical residents to stay right here and serve the communities of South Dakota. The governor's primary care task force recommended the elimination of this barrier to moonlighting while still maintaining oversight of medical residents who have not yet completed their training. Senate Bill 118 would simply simplify the statute by eliminating the resident training permit and the resident certificate and replacing it with a resident license. Only medical school students enrolled in an accredited residency program would be eligible for a resident license. If the resident leaves the medical the residency program, the license would be forfeited. Section 3 of the bill prohibits a medical resident from providing medical services outside of their accredited residency program until they have successfully completed 1 year of residency training. Our Department of Health, Secretary Hollingsworth and her team work closely with the Board of Medicine, the South Dakota State Medical Association, Avira Sanford, the School of Medicine, and the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations to develop the language you see in Senate Bill 118. We're very comfortable with this proposal. We think it will help us retain our medical residents in South Dakota and help get additional care and services to the citizens citizens of this state, and we strongly urge your support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will stand by for any questions.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 118. Proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning once again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Terry Dash, South Dakota Council of Mental Health Centers, also South Dakota Council of Substance Abuse Directors. Very briefly, I think all has been said that needs to be said, except I would point out that Dr. Van Gerpen's specialty is psychiatry. And the ideas that he posited first came to my attention as a member of the behavioral health work group over the course of this last summer, and the matter was referred to the primary care task force because certainly that his idea needed to be expanded upon to answer the general needs of the state across the board. But I think that one of the things that inspired Dr. Van Gerpen was his association with some of my mental health centers and his recognition of the fact that we do indeed in this state have a dearth of psychiatric speciality. And we see this as a way of answering some of that need at the community level. And just to reiterate one point that Ms. Bowman made, this is a golden opportunity for us to retain our residents right here in South Dakota and giving them the experience they need, not just clinically, but at the community level. So we heartily support this measure, and we thank the governor for bringing it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 118. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have nothing to add other than, for the record, the South Dakota State Medical Association is in favor of this legislation.
Your name is Dean Krogman.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 118. I know I need to be reminded once in a while who I am, too.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am not Dean Krogman. My name is Lauren Pankratz. I'm the registered lobbyist for Sanford Health, and we, too, rise in support of Senate Bill 118. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 118.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I've never had my name put out in public as much as I have this morning, but I'm Sean Van Gerpen. I'm the child and adolescent psychiatrist in Sioux Falls. I also serve as the adult psychiatry residency program director in Sioux Falls. I would urge your support of Senate Bill 118. You've heard the recruitment of medical residents into our facilities in South Dakota is one of the key reasons for this bill. I totally agree with that. I think there's two others to keep in mind, however. First of all, this is a great tool for me as a residency director to recruit medical students into my residency programs. Residents sometimes walk out of medical school with bills exceeding, in some cases, I have residents exceeding $250,000 in tuition costs. They want to get started paying those bills. They want to get started building their families. They want to find a place to settle down. Having the chance to moonlight actually allows them to be able to do that. The other thing that I would point out is we do talk about recruitment, but what about retention? And I think this is a bill that helps with the retention of physicians that we already do have in South Dakota. It's another access point for facilities to be able to get coverage for the physicians that they already do have in their communities. It allows those physicians to be able to go out and go on vacation with their family. It allows them to go to those ball games 300 miles across the state. And it provides coverage for them, which in turn helps to improve physician satisfaction in their practice, and it also helps to go a long ways to prevent burnout. So I would support this bill, and I'd encourage you to support Senate Bill 118. Thank you.
Very good, and thank you very much. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 118.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Deb Fisher Clemens with Avera Health. I, too, would just lend my support to this particular legislation, but I would also like to publicly thank Dr. Sean Van Gerpen. He did put a lot of work into this. He's been talking with me about this for a couple of years. And I'd also like to thank the Secretary as we worked together to put this legislation together. It was a very big effort by a lot of folks that are bringing this to fruition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 118. Proponent testimony. Opponent testimony to Senate Bill 118. Opponent testimony. Seeing none, we'll close public hearing, move into committee questions. Any questions that the committee may have? Representative Heineman.
I'm normally not this talkative, but just for the committee's clarification, maybe we could have someone answer that, I guess. The question I have, I realize, and if I understand it correctly, a four-year medical student graduating from USD would be accepted into a residency program, family practice residency. Then he or she would apply for and receive a resident license in that facility only for the first year. Is that correct?
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Donnie Hollingsworth. I'm the Secretary of Health. And Representative Heineman, your question, the resident license would be available to any resident in any residency program in South Dakota.
Okay.
But they would apply for that, yes, as they begin their residency program. They cannot leave, however, the confines of that program to moonlight until after they've successfully completed their first year of residency training. And throughout the process, they are under the auspices of the program, the requirements of the residency program. They're not just out there practicing without any supervision.
Follow up. Yes, and I understand it. I just want the committee to understand that.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Further committee questions? Seeing none, we'll move into committee discussion and or action. Representative Eklund.
Mr. Chair, I recommend do pass. Make a motion.
There's a do pass recommendation motion by Representative Eklund, seconded by Representative Magstead. Comment.
Yeah, I lived this program. It was great. When I got out of medical school, I took a job in the residency in Sioux Falls family practice. I had $15,000 a year, and I had a baby and a wife and a house, and it was kind of tight. And I was able to moonlight in Iowa after my first year, and it was one of the best learning experiences. The first year, you need that first year before you're ready to go out and work in an emergency room, and even then you might not be ready, but sometimes it's trial by fire. But this is a good program. I don't think there's any negatives to it that I know of. And like I said, we were doing it back 30 years ago, so I'm certainly in support of it.
Very good. Any further comments? Seeing none, we have before us on Senate Bill 118 a do-pass recommendation. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Campbell.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Magstead.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Chairman, 13 yay, 0 nay.
We will send Senate Bill 118 to the House floor with a do pass recommendation. Representative Eklund, would you take that on the floor for us, please? Thank you very much. We'll move on to House Bill 1210, which is to restrict state involvement in certain tribal aspects of the Federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. We'll take proponent testimony for House Bill 1210. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And I'd like to say I'm Kevin Killard, State Representative of District 27, and happy Chante Squia Day. That's sweetheart in Lakota. So I just want to extend that to everybody, you and your family. So this is going to be very quick. I am going to ask that the committee respectfully defer this bill to its 41st day in regards of some information that we found out within the past couple of weeks. Also, just in regards to there is another separate additional committee, leadership committee, that is dealing with this issue. So hopefully we can kind of address this issue through there. So I do thank the committee and committee chair for taking this bill, but and I would like to talk with committee members a little bit further about this issue, but I do ask for that right now. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Were there any further proponent testimony on this bill and any opponent testimony? Okay, we'll close the public hearing and move to action.
Chair.
Representative Heinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I applaud Representative Killer. Him and I have had lengthy discussions about this, and we all know that Indian health care is lacking, and there's things that we can do to improve it. So with that, I move that we move this to the 41st day.
Yeah, that would actually be out of order. You had a preparatory comment before a motion, but thank you for that because that's a very good comment. So I would entertain.
Mr. Chairman.
You guys are really great. I just have to choose which one I want now. Representative Heideman.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend we move to 41st day.
Seconded by Representative Hager, or not?
Substitute motion.
Oh, substitute motion, okay. We need a second. Second by Representative Magstead. Comment on the motion. We'll slow down here a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I agree with the sponsor. I think we should proceed with this process.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, move to table.
This is a tabling motion to the 41st.
As in no discussion.
Substitute motion to table. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Representative Heinert. And that is non-debatable. Call the roll, please.
Representatives Campbell.
Pass.
Eklund.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman. Heinert.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Magstead.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Representative Campbell.
Aye.
13 yay, 0 nay.
House Bill 1210 is tabled. We will move on to Senate Bill 103, which is to remove the required waiting period before cremated remains may be released to be scattered. We will now take proponent testimony for Senate Bill 103. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Health Committee. I'm State Senator Chantal Krebs from District 10, which is in the area of Renner. Senate Bill 103 is a bill that's been brought forth into our attention from the South Dakota Funeral Home Association, or Funeral Directors Association, excuse me, and you'll hear from their representation in a little bit. It's an act, it's really simple. It's an act to remove the required waiting period before cremated remains may be released or scattered. You're probably wondering, I didn't even know that. You had to actually wait for your loved one's remains to be scattered, and that's the intention of the bill, as you'll see in line 15, is to take that so-called before 30 days after the date of the cremation. That waiting period is the actual ask that we're making today, is to remove that waiting period. You're probably going to ask next is why, and why was that in statute? And that's another question that we probably really can't clarify, but all we can find out is that from the Funeral Directors Association is that it might have been following a national model in the 1990s. So with no further ado, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'll let the good gentleman from Pierre, Mr. Miller, speak further. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm the good gentleman here. My name is also Bob Miller, and I represent the South Dakota Funeral Directors. We're not real sure where this law came from. We do believe it was a national model that happened a long time back. We can't find anybody that knows why this particular section was in there. That's one of the dangers, of course, of adopting national models, and we deal with that quite often with model legislation. What essentially happens is we end up with two funerals. If you're going to scatter your loved one's remains, we have to hold on to them for 30 days. We've already had the funeral, now we're bringing everybody back again for a scattering of the ashes of the human remains. And so it just doubles people's problems and grief. You really don't need to be holding on to grandma for 30 days after she's been cremated. We'll give it back to you. Disposable. There are plenty of laws already in the books on how you scatter remains and what must be done and so on, but we don't get into that. We're just simply repeating it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 103. Proponent testimony. Seeing none, any opponent testimony for Senate Bill 103. Opponent testimony. Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. Move on to committee questions. Any questions from the committee? Representative Soli.
Thank you. I have a question for either. Doesn't matter. How does this differ from the burial of remains? this is specifically for someone who's going to scatter ashes, right? Not. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's absolutely correct, Representative. If this only applies to scatter, if you're going to bury the ashes, we can give you them right away. You can take possession immediately. It's only with scatter. 30-day waiting period. And I know it gets sillier as you go along. I don't know why. That's the law. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Steele.
Thank you. We've eliminated the 30 days, but I assume then the ashes are received right away then, too. I mean, I see no time limit in here. The next day or anything like that, it's just, seems it's right away, I assume, right?
It's 30 days from the date of the cremation.
Mr. Speaker.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman. Presently, but now with this change, then what?
Immediate.
They get it as soon as... Just like the burial. Okay, I assumed that, but I wanted to clarify and make sure. Okay, thank you.
Question. Further questions, committee questions? Seeing none, we'll move on to discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move DuPass.
Second.
DuPass recommendation by Representative Hager, seconded by Representative Magstead. Comment.
I think from some loved one's perspective, it brings family unity to be all together at a time of funeral and also to scatter the ashes. So I encourage your favorable support.
Very good. Any further comments? Seeing none, we have before us a DuPass recommendation on Senate Bill 103. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Campbell.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Hawks.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Magstead.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Chairman Munsterman, we have 13 yea, 0 nay.
Very good. Senate Bill 103 will move to the House floor and a do pass motion. That is our calendar for the day. I do want to bring you up to speed on something that's going on, and I don't know if you caught if you read your newspaper today or not, but there will be a discussion, a joint health committee meeting between the House and the Senate health committees in regards to expansion of Medicaid. And we're in the process of setting that up, when that meeting would be. It'll probably be after session and after crossover. And what we'll be doing is essentially just taking public testimony. There's no bill to be scrutinized here, but it's just on the topic of expanding Medicaid, and we want to hear from the folks. And so we'll take that public testimony. We may take a couple hours, you know, of it. And then at that point in time, that public testimony and what we learn from that will be used in further discussions in that whole dialogue of whether we should expand Medicaid or not and when, you know, all of those things. So I wanted to bring you up to speed on that we've been entrusted with that conversation and that public testimony along with the Senate Health Committee, and I think that's a cool thing. But, yes, Representative Heineman.
Mr. Chairman, so I assume you're after crossover day, so that means that the bills that, are pertaining to Medicaid will have been dealt with by that time?
Not necessarily. There's vehicle bills that... Well, we'll be seeing some vehicle bills on the House floor. We passed some out of state affairs that really are a carcass, if you will. And so we'll see how things progress towards the end of session and go from there.
But all the bills that are pertaining to Medicaid
That have been pertained to Medicaid in different areas,
yes,
that have bills now, yes, on the House and on the Senate side. Mm-hmm. But what this is just the topic of expanding Medicaid. That's it. And it's just public testimony. So there isn't any particular bill that we're dialoguing over other than the topic of the expansion of Medicaid. I want to make sure that's clear. And then collecting public testimony, pro and con, to that subject matter. So anyway, very good. Well, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chair. Chair.
Yes, Representative Steele.
Thank you. I'd like to make a comment. I should have earlier, I guess. Looking at the first two bills, all the health people pretty much have left, but I don't know a whole lot about HPAT. They've got a really tough program there, rigid, but there's so much compassion in that, and there's so much helping people, lifting them up. I was very impressed. I didn't realize the program of what it had. I was very impressed with that, mm-hmm. what they've done, and they need to be complimented on that. And the second program, as far as the 118 for the doctors, this is fantastic. I think a couple of the programs that they have come up with that I'm impressed with both of those, and I'm sorry I didn't get that said while most of them were still here. I really appreciate the work they've done. Thank you.
Well, you'll have an opportunity to express that on the House floor. And both of those, I think that'd be great to do that. A lot of times we don't realize a lot of the good things that we do in South Dakota. And I always have the saying that we're better than we think we are in this state, and we need to celebrate that. So with that, I'll try again and entertain another motion to adjourn. Moved by Representative Steele, seconded by Representative Westra. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed. Very good. Thanks, guys.